Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Oh, so very deep. Ladies and gentlemen, support the troops, won't you? Because we all do, in each in our own way. Take the Air Force, for example. It dumped the incinerated partial remains of at least 274 American troops in a Virginia landfill far more than the military had acknowledged before halting the secretive practice 3 years ago. This is according to a story in the Washington Post this week. The landfill dumping was concealed from families who had authorized the military to dispose of the remains in a dignified and respectful manner, Air Force officials say. There are no plans, they said, to alert those families now, even now. The Air Force had maintained it could not estimate how many troops might have had their remains sent to a landfill. The new data for the first time show the scope of an embarrassing episode at vaunted Dover Air Force Base. The landfill deposits were never formally authorized under military policies or regulations. They were also not disclosed to senior Pentagon officials who conducted a high-level review of cremation policies at Dover way back in 2008. Air Force and Pentagon officials had said determining how many remains went to the landfill would, quote, require a massive effort and time to recall records and research individually, said the Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel. Senior Air Force leaders said there was no intent to deceive. This week, after the Washington Post pressed for information contained in the Dover Mortuary's electronic database, the Air Force produced a tally based on those records. 976 fragments from 274 military personnel were cremated, incinerated, and taken to the landfill between 2004 and 2008. A separate federal investigation of the Dover Mortuary last month, prompted by whistleblowers, uncovered, quote, gross mismanagement, I'll say. Yeah. The problems transpired at a time when the mortuary was shielded from public scrutiny. News coverage of the return of fallen troops to Dover was banned by President George H.W. Bush in 1991 before the first Gulf War. The ban remained until April 2009 when the current administration abandoned the ban. Air Force officials said they don't know when the landfill disposals began. They said mortuary leaders decided to end the practice in May 2008 because, quote, there was a better way to do it, unquote. The military now cremates unclaimed and unidentified body parts and buries the ashes at sea, just like Osama. Asked if the landfill was a dignified resting place, an Air Force official said, the way we're doing it today is much better. Support the troops, ladies and gentlemen. Won't you please? Somebody gotta. Gotta. Now, this is, as you know, if you've looked at a calendar, kind of almost halfway into December. And that means it's time for us to, here at the show, and by us I mean me, to take a look back at the 12 months past as they've been documented on this particular broadcast. Starting with, it's interesting to look back at this particular set of developments because as of last night, a Republican debate in Iowa, it's clear that the front runner, that is to say, in a race that's had nobody actually voting yet, how does that happen, is Newt Gingrich. Of course, 6 months ago, his campaign was assumed to be left for dead after most of his campaign personnel fled the scene. And you may remember at that time that that was the beginning of Newt's attempt to explain what has become known in the trade as his baggage, i.e. his three wives, each of which succeeded the previous one during an adulterous affair with said Newt. The current wife, who looks so pure now, was actually a congressional aide whom he was engaging with in the halls of Congress while married to wife number two. And so, as I say, he was trying to, earlier this year, deal with that baggage. It's hard to call your wife your baggage, but there you go. That's the problem. By saying that he was just so much in love with his country, he was spending so much time at work, that that's what accounted for him straying and making these mistakes. He was so much in love with his country, he got into an adulterous affair. Beginning this year's Year in Rebuke on Hello, Welcome to the Show.
The Year in Rebuke.
Come on, baby. I mean, man. You know, there's something very deep between us. Yes, I'm talking about the Potomac. All I want to do right now is take your hand. That's right. And just do the thing that feels so right. Pledge allegiance all night long. Feels so right, baby. Pledge all night. Oh, yeah. Just you and me. You see those stars and stripes? I see them too. They get me super hot. They do the same to you. We got to get together, babe. Talk some Article One. We'll go through the whole Constitution, babe, before the night is done. We'll argue Adamses, John Quincy versus John. You can take your clothes off, babe. For a while I'll keep mine on. Just wanna lay you down and see where that may take us. We'll make some red hot love or read some Federalist Papers. We'll have sex and balances. Make a perfect union. Stars and stripes. We'll make love beneath stars and stripes. They're even on my briefs. Stars and stripes. Gonna worship them tonight. Can't get enough of your flag. Oh, baby. This desk is big enough for two, don't you think? I sure do. I gaze into your eyes, it's Mount Rushmore that I see. Let's fly here through the night, then fly to Washington, D.C. Gotta have what you got, patriotism in every pore. Gonna sing the anthem very slow, and make you cry for more. Let's play a game, baby, good way to begin. You're Ellis Island, babe. And you let me in. Just wanna lay you down and see where that may take us. We'll make some red hot love or read some Federalist Papers. We'll have sex and balances. Make a perfect union. Stars and stripes. We'll make love beneath stars and stripes. They're even on my briefs. Stars and stripes. Gonna worship them tonight. Oh, baby. Can't get enough of your flag. Let's make a little compact right here. You won't tell the sergeant at arms, and I won't either. We got some amendments to consider.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, from the show world headquarters, I'm Harry Shearer welcoming you to this edition of the show. You're in Rebuke, style-y, but first, here's Addie.
Clean, safe. Save to meter.
What am I, Johnny Carson now?
Well, I just thought an introduction might be appropriate as opposed to just sort of pointing to you.
It's hard to see me anyway.
I know, he's so small. Addie the Atom. News of the Atom, ladies and gentlemen. News of our friend the Atom. Radioactive cesium, believed to have come from Fuke, has been found in a brand of Japanese baby formula. Charge more. Now with Fuke added, cesium levels of up to 31 becquerels per kilogram have been found in baby formula made by the Meiji Corporation. It's below the government set allowable limit of 200 becquerels per kilogram. There are concerns that babies are more susceptible to the harmful effects of radiation. You see, companies, which is why it's a good idea to, you know, be X-raying babies at the airport. The company suspects a link between the contamination and the meltdowns at the Fuke plant, saying hot air used in the drying process may have contained cesium. It's now recalling 400,000 cans of the formula, which are believed to have been contaminated. Look for those to show up in some third world country. Dateline Tokyo, Japan's utility operating the crippled Fuke plant said it has scrapped a plan to dump water that it treated for radiation contamination into the sea. Following fierce protests from fishing groups, Tokyo Electric Power, TEPCO, said it had said on Thursday it was considering discharging some treated water into the sea because it was running out of storage space. What are we going to do with it? Dump it in the ocean. The time-tested human answer. That caused an uproar among Japanese fishing cooperatives. Treated means once high radioactive content has been reduced considerably, but not completely. TEPCO is now considering building more storage facilities or recycling the water. Considering that. But, you know, they really wanted to dump it. Dateline Toledo, Ohio, the operator of a nuclear reactor where cracks were discovered in the plant's concrete shell, told the AP it alerted regulators last month to more cracks found near the top of the structure. Regulators were aware of the additional cracks at the Davis Bessie plant near Toledo, Ohio, before they signed off on allowing the plant, shut down in October, to restart this week. Mit cracks, meaning some free radiation for you? Yeah, they charge you for the electricity, but the radiation is free. Dateline Limerick, Pennsylvania. Yes. There once was a nuclear plant where nobody ever said can't. For a month this spring, two safety systems needed in case of a nuclear accident at Exelon Nuclear's Limerick Generating Station were not working properly due to an error by plant personnel. That's according to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. One safety system designed to get enough water to one of the nuclear reactors at Limerick during an accident, and another designed to isolate radiation in the plant's containment building during an accident, would both have failed if relied upon during an accident, the NRC found. As a result, the agency will increase government oversight and inspections of the plant located in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. NRC issued a white finding, a problem of low to moderate safety significant at the plant. It involved inadequate procedures related to the operation of two main feedwater system valves. That sounds moderate to me. But I'm a moderate kind of. Dateline Brattleboro, Vermont. Two recent incidents at Vermont Yankee have nuclear safety advocates concerned about personnel issues at the nuclear power plant. On October 12th, a technician accidentally flipped the crucial circuit breakers on the shutdown cooling system used to keep the reactor vessel cool during refueling and maintenance outages. And on December 12th, 2 months later, a technician disconnected a fuel line on one of the plant's emergency diesel generators. Wait a minute. How can it be on December 12th? Today is December 11th. Okay, then. Maybe last year. A technician disconnected a fuel line on one of the plant's emergency diesel generators, disabling it at the same time the other generator was down for maintenance. The generator was out of commission for 2 minutes, according to the NRC. It stated both incidents were of low safety significance. But the mistakes were indicative of concerns raised by the public oversight panel, which reviewed a reliability audit of the Vermont Yankee plant. The oversight panel felt pretty strongly about the need to improve Vermont Yankee's procedures to include human factors, such as the plant staff ages and as the plant ages and retires. The staff ages and retires. The plant just ages. These latest problems of Vermont Yankee cause me, said a member of the panel, to remain concerned about issues that were identified by the oversight panel 3 years ago. Back in Japan, as much as 45,000 liters, that's 11,870 gallons, of highly radioactive water leaked from the Fuke plant last weekend, and some may have reached the sea. So why not dump some more? The leakage shows the company known as TEPCO is still struggling to control the disaster 9 months after the earthquake and tsunami. The water contained 1.8 millisieverts per hour of gamma radiation and 110 millisieverts of beta radiation. The source of the beta radiation in the water is likely to include strontium-90. Watch for it in your milk, which, if absorbed in the body through eating tainted seaweed or fish, accumulates in bone and can cause cancer, said the head of an Atomic Energy Research Institute in Japan. Since the disaster, the utility has reported several leaks of radiated water into the sea, though its estimates of their size have been disputed. The water leaked from a desalination unit and through a cracked concrete wall. Oh, well, that's what the cracks are for. Into a gutter that drains into the Pacific Ocean. Radiated water has now been pumped out of the building where it was leaking from and dumped it. No, I don't know where it's gone. As much as 300 liters leaked through the crack. The utility is still checking how much contaminated water reached the sea and the effects on the environment. Yeah, I'll be waiting for that. And 8 months on from the nuclear meltdown at Fuke, the long-term cancer risks for children are in the spotlight. A new study has highlighted more immediate problems, though. Thousands of children living in the fallout zone are confined indoors because of radiation fears. Doctors worry they're not growing at a sufficient rate.
Well, they're children. Should be short.
Come on now. The kids can't just play in the dirt or enjoy nature, said one teacher. They may look cheerful enough, but they're building up a tremendous amount of stress inside. According to doctors, stress in children can lead to physical problems. A pediatrician has been tracking the weight of 250 kindergarten children less than 60 kilometers from Fuke. His findings are startling. They show there was an average weight gain of 0.8 of a kilogram over the last year. The year before, children in the same age group put on 3.1 kilograms, nearly four times as much weight. Kids who can't get enough outdoor exercise tend to lose their appetite, and they then may not get enough protein to build up their muscles. So, stunted children, stunted child syndrome. Addie?
What? I'm supposed to be proud or ashamed or what?
Nothing. You're not supposed to feel anything. You're an atom. News of our friend the atom, ladies and gentlemen. Clean, cheap, safe, too clean, to maiden on this broadcast. Now, it was early this year that Larry King ended his reign. King has a reign, right? On CNN, and announced shortly thereafter that he would be doing stand-up. And he has, in fact, launched upon a stand-up tour. Announced that he wanted to be cryogenically frozen. I hadn't known this until this week, but yes, he is. Yes, he has said that. And he also announced that he was early in the year that he was going to go back to radio. Radio. Yeah, radio. Just imagine.
Larry King.
From all my producers are calling the virtual Nate and Alves, this is the Larry King radio program. And we said we're going to do stand-up and we're going to do radio. And let me tell you, this sure isn't stand-up. You know, I did radio in the old days, 5 hours in the middle of the night. These days you can do, 3 hours a day. I don't want to do that. I said, what about 15 minutes? They said, Paul Harvey's dead. So you can do a couple minutes. I said, all right, I got to do stand-up. Give me the few minutes. So this is going to be like the Osgood file for people under 80. And we're going to have guests, and we're going to take phone calls. It's all going to move faster than Piers Morgan's Q rating. And we got our first call at 1-800-TELL-LARRY. We didn't even give out the phone number. How about that? Reno, Nevada, hello.
Hey, Larry, long-time listener. First-time felon. Hey, man, it's the juice.
O.J. Simpson calling from prison. You couldn't get a better stunt booking if we tried. O.J., how you doing?
Oh, I'm okay, Larry. Yeah. Although I still don't have HBO. Mm. Man, you never realize how bad NBC is. So you got to watch it.
Yeah.
Look, man, I just called to say congratulations on your new gig. Yeah. You know, I was going to do radio for a while, but it was going to be 3 hours a day, and my golf game was going to go to hell.
Yeah, yeah. You're not golfing now, are you?
No, Larry. You know, looking back, you know, with the hindsight of 2020 luxury, radio would have been better than prison.
Juice, there was a report in the National Enquirer last week that you got beaten up in prison. Mm. Any truth to that?
Yes, Larry, it's totally true that they reported that. No, you know, man, it's just like it was on the outside. Yeah. Really, just nothing but fellow inmates asking me for my autograph, you know, wanting me to sign their prison memorabilia.
Yeah. Juice, I remember when you were being held in city jail during your Vegas trial, you complained about the food.
Yeah.
You need any pastrami? Because we got a deal for the best in the world.
No, Larry, really good food here in medium security. Mm. You know, lots of fish, lots of boiled legumes. Sort of food I used to recommend on my workout video.
You could just imagine how good the food is in minimum security.
Yeah, I dream about that sometimes. But Larry, I had a serious reason for calling.
Okay, we got a hard break in about a minute.
Cool. You know, I've been watching the news about this guy, Gaddafi.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a bad dude, you know. He said what you want to about the Jews, but I never opened fire on more than two of my own people.
And I don't think Gaddafi ever gave a quarter of what you did to my cardiac foundation. Yeah. Although we did get a heck of a donation from one of his kids.
The one who speaks English?
I hope so.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just saying, Larry, yeah. You know, I'm watching the chaos, you know, and the killing, and you know, all this stuff at the UN, which is just kind of like, you know, sports center, but with less power.
Mm.
And I was thinking, how are we going to get rid of this dude, you know, because he's not good for the Libyans, he's not good for America.
He's not good for the Jews.
There you go.
So, Jews, kind of quickly, because we lose the network at 5820, what's your point?
Larry, the only way to get Gaddafi is with an inside operation using specially trained personnel. You know, black ops, and I don't mean Superfly black, you know.
No, you're talking secret.
That's right.
Well, I'm sure the CIA is cooking up something. That's their job.
I'm just saying, you know, someone with that kind of training, in my case, Navy SEAL training, could be very useful to that kind of operation, you know, as opposed to just sitting around trying to figure out how to siphon HBO off the warden's cable.
OJ, are you saying you'd volunteer for an operation to capture and assassinate Colonel Gaddafi? Quickly.
Hey, Larry, I may be a convicted felon and a hero in the eyes of most people, but I'm an American first. You know, my country wanted me to use my Navy SEAL training.
Now, you got that for a movie, right?
Yeah, but that was the most grueling 2 days I ever spent. So, you know, I'm here. They know where to find me. I'm either in my cell or out with the guys playing checkers. I still got my wetsuit in storage.
O.J. Simpson volunteering to kill Gaddafi. Oh,
or at least rattle him real good.
If that don't get us to make on our debut show, nothing will. Juice, I can't thank you enough.
Always a pleasure, Larry. Good luck with the show.
Good luck with the SEAL thing. Tomorrow, Newt Gingrich for the whole 4 minutes. From the virtual, Nate and Al's. So long.
Larry King.
I'm sure he'll get better diction by the singers. Those were the Dallas-based singers. Achieve certain economies without. Now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersole Jr. British Prime Minister David Cameron has personally been involved in drawing up plans that will double the money needed to produce spectacular opening and closing ceremonies at next year's Olympic Games. Double the money! Despite the worsening economic climate, the Prime Minister sanctioned spending more on fireworks and acrobats at the beginning and end of the London Games. You can eat those, can't you? The news came as the public spending watchdog warned that the bill for security at the Games next year will also be twice as high as previously thought. The National Audit Office found that the Games organizers had spent or committed to spend nearly all of the $13 or $14 billion budget prompting a fear that more money will be needed to be spent on the Olympics next year. The government has sanctioned an extra $62 or $63 million to stage the ceremonies, the opening ceremonies, adding to the $60 million previously set aside by games organizers. The Prime Minister, the Culture Secretary, Jeremy Hunt, had decided that they needed to maximize and promote London to the 4 billion television viewers after being presented with a range of ceremonial components across the ceremonies. The Sports Minister, Hugh Robertson, acknowledged the current economic conditions, but said the potential benefits that could flow through enhanced tourism justified the increase.
This is a great national moment. It is about seizing the great ceremonial and economic moment to benefit the economy and the public and tourism in the long run. This money will not be spent on fireworks. It will not be money going up in smoke, and it will be an important investment in the economic future of the country.
For some time, there had been creative tensions between the designers behind the ceremonies and Olympic officials because their grand creative ideas couldn't be contained within the budget. Cameron actively stepped in to change the plans for the ceremonies. And the government also said it was doubling the game security budget as the number of guards required to secure Olympic venues ratcheted up to 24,000. The security budget will exceed $1.7 billion. Total costs of securing the venues has increased. The security budget had increased because of the unstable international security environment, more detailed design of venues, and the release of competition schedules. And the Olympic Park venues will cost taxpayers millions every year to maintain after the Games, according to a London authority, prompting calls for a rigorous marketing campaign to attract families to help offset the cost. The Assembly said the cost of maintaining the venues could be around $500,000 a year for the Velo Park and hockey and tennis arenas, and potentially millions for the Aquatic Center. Only the multipurpose handball center appears capable of paying its own way. The potential costs of the Aquatic Center could be several million pounds a year, despite projections it will attract almost 1 million visitors annually. The Olympics. It's a movement. And we all need one. Every day! Well, yes, indeed we do. Ladies and gentlemen, mention of Muammar Gaddafi is a reminder of one of the major news stories of the year, which is the Arab Spring moving into the Libyan summer, and it's and then of course the rerun with the Egyptian autumn, and there was of course a great deal of controversy about the operation by the Western nations, Europe, back when it was Europe before it split up. Condolences, and the United States to supposedly protect civilians in Libya from the depredations of the Libyan government, but eventually it became obvious to hasten the overthrow of that of the Gaddafi government, which of course now has been achieved. And there were many in the halls of Washington who denounced Colonel Gaddafi this year, who weren't so negative about him a few years back. We'll revisit that now on
The Year in Rebuke.
From our headquarters in Washington, this is Face the Meat with Bob Schlifter. Now, from Washington, Bob Schlifter.
And good morning again. While the East Coast, and therefore the media, and therefore the nation, has its eyes on Hurricane Irene, we're going to be talking this morning about the other big story this week, and of course that's Libya. After rebel troops entered the capital of Tripoli a few days ago, it looked like this story was over. But subsequent events, including messages from Colonel Gaddafi and frequent appearances in Tripoli by his son, Saif, have given indications that we can't take our eyes off Libya just yet. So we're talking this morning with two senators who have strong feelings on the subject. In Nogales, Arizona, Senator John McCain.
Good morning, Bob.
And here in our Washington studio, Senator Joe Lieberman of Connecticut.
I'm glad to be here, Bob.
Well, we've got some bottled water and batteries.
Well, it's a good place to be, then.
It sure is. Senator McCain, you've been very critical of the Obama administration for its handling of the Libyan matter. Here's what you said a couple of weeks ago on Fox.
My only regret is that this administration moved so slowly and reluctantly to commit American military power to this mission.
Well, now that Libya looks like a NATO success story, do you still feel that way?
Yes, I do, Bob, and I'll tell you why. This was a bad person. He was a danger to his neighborhood. He still has some WMDs, and we don't know what he might do with them if he feels cornered. And I just think, leading from behind, as our president admitted he was doing, just leaves you in the long run looking at the backsides of Britain and France.
If I can add something to that, Bob, is that by laying back as the administration has done, we've sent a signal to the people in the street that they are in control. And now we don't know who they are or what they stand for. We've got a good friend and staunch ally in that neighborhood, and you know the Arab street isn't necessarily on their side.
Yeah, well, so, and also, Bob...
Senator McCain, sorry to have to interrupt you, but I'm just getting word that our correspondent in Libya is reporting that there's been a new audio tape released by Colonel Gaddafi saying that his troops are launching an all-out assault on what he calls the rats, in his words, of infested Tripoli. And the AP is reporting the rebels are falling back in many areas of the city. Now, you were saying...
Well, Bob, Senator Lieberman and I visited with Colonel Gaddafi a couple of years ago in Libya after he courageously decided to end his nuclear program. We both felt that he was someone we could work with, and I think we're now seeing signs that he's a strong and resourceful leader.
And Bob, this administration has spent nearly $1 billion trying to pick winners in a country where we had a government that both Senator McCain and I felt we could do business with. I just hope that if this trend continues, that Colonel Gaddafi understands that there have always been people in the American government who want to work with him, not demonize him or isolate him, and to bring him and his very important oil resource fully into the community of nations.
Well, but doesn't this put us at odds with our NATO ally, Senator McCain?
Well, Bob, you know me. I'm kind of a straight talker.
Yes, indeed.
I just hope the day never comes when an American administration decides policy based on what makes other nations happy as opposed to what's right.
And, Bob, let me just add, as we're nearing the anniversary of 9/11, we need reliable partners in this very challenging part of the world. Colonel Gaddafi has indicated over and over again his desire to...
And now we have our correspondent, Alan Dozier, on the line from Tripoli, gentlemen. So let's just go to him for the latest on the situation. Alan?
Bob, what we're seeing from our vantage point near the newly renamed Martyr Square is a rout. Rebel troops have regrouped, and in one of the most disciplined operations they've pulled off since this battle began, they've sent the forces loyal to the Gaddafi regime, which at this point seem to be primarily mercenary troops from nations in southern Africa, sent them retreating all the way back to the outskirts of the city. Most of this area is quiet now. The gunfire for the moment has ceased. Bob?
And back here to Senator Lieberman, you were saying, Senator?
Well, Bob, I just want to say, and I'm sure Senator McCain joins me in this, that this is a great day for liberty. Nobody knows better than Senator McCain and I do the suffering the Libyan people have undergone at the hands of this man. And I just wish this administration could get off the sidelines and get to the head of this parade, which is where we belong.
And Senator McCain, any last word from you?
Well, Bob, I just want to associate myself with the words of my good friend, Senator Lieberman. For the life of me, I can't understand our hesitancy to aid and lead the forces of freedom in Libya. I'm glad the president has cut short his vacation. I just hope he cuts short this policy of waffling with the liberty of the Libyan people, Bob.
Well, I want to thank you both for being with us this morning. Our usual panel has fled the city to find safety in the foothills, so until next week, song.
This program was produced, and the selection of the guests was the sole responsibility. Face the Meat came to you from Washington.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the
warm. Researchers have added further clarity. That's what Herman Cain wanted, wasn't it?
Clarity.
Further clarity to the global climate trend, proving that global warming is showing no signs of slowing down and that further increases are to be expected in the next few decades, this according to phys.org.com. They revealed the true global warming trend by bringing together and analyzing five leading global temperature data sets covering 1979 to 2010, factoring out three of the main factors that account for short-term fluctuations, El Niño, volcanic eruptions, and variations in the sun's brightness. After removing these known short-term fluctuations, the researchers, statisticians, and climate experts from Tempo Analytics and the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research showed the global temperature has increased by half a degree centigrade in the past 30 years. In all the five global data sets, 2009 and 2010, were the two hottest years in the average over all five data sets. 2010 is the hottest year on record. This is in the journal Environmental Research Letters. And the ranges of species will have to change dramatically as a result of climate change between now and 2100, because the climate will change more than 100 times faster than the rate at which species are known to adapt. This according to a newly published study by Indiana University researchers. The study, which focuses on North American rattlesnakes, finds that the rate of future change in suitable habitat will be 2 to 3 orders of magnitude greater than the average change over the last 300 millennia, a time that included three major glacial cycles and significant variation in climate and temperature. We find that over the next 90 years at best, these species ranges will change more than 100 times faster than they have during the past 320,000 years, said the lead author of the paper. This rate of change is unlike anything these species have experienced probably since their formation. The study was published by the online science journal PLOS-1. The research makes use of the fact that species have been responding to climate change throughout their history. Their past responses can inform what to expect in the future. So, lesson, ladies and gentlemen, don't be a rattlesnake. I know you may be in show business, but still, that's no excuse. Now, returning to our look back at 2011, Larry King was not the only one to announce he was leaving his longtime post. Garrison Keillor announced, only to recant later in the year, he announced that he was leaving the position as host of Prairie Home Companion by the year 2013. As I say, he's recanted since. But that didn't stop the process early on for seeking to find his successor, as you'll hear now in
The Year in Rebuke.
Okay, shall we see a few more now?
Oh, I guess so. Pickens looking a bit slim so far.
Oh, I think you'll like this next group. Okay, so. Next.
Hi.
All right, then.
Hi. It's been a quiet week in Poughkeepsie, New York, where the...
Hold on just a second there. You sound like you care a little bit.
I do care. It's a story about my brother being in a plane crash.
You know, I don't really think so.
Okay, thank you. Next.
Hello.
Afternoon.
This is about how Mama Schlorman first started making Kugel. And did she have Spielkes that August afternoon? Bubby had just...
You know, I think this might be demographically a little challenging for our audience. A little cosmopolitan.
Yes, they said in D.C. you might be a little less than receptive to Yiddish kite when...
Thank you. Next.
Hey, hi. Cool. So, word from my homies in G-Town? Straight up, Father Cedric has a fave altar boy. He's friended him and not in a Facebook way for shizzle.
Not sure I understand him.
Thank you.
Epic fail, dude.
Next.
Yeah. So, Oljard of Sun says to Sven Svenborg, ja, Sven, so I...
Thank you.
Well, sir, maybe we'll just turn it into a music show. Mr. Butch Thompson, Mr. Peter Strusko, Mr. Greg Bowne.
Would you like to take another five?
You know something? I'm almost 70. Let's make it a 10.
And now the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Deadline San Salvador. El Salvador's government asked for forgiveness this week over a Civil War-era massacre in 1981 in which soldiers executed more than 1,000 people, nearly half of them children. Today marks the 30th anniversary of the slaughter at the small northeastern village of El Mozote, where troops rounded up men, women, and children, accused many of collaborating with leftist guerrillas, and killed them in cold blood. It was among the worst massacres in the country's bloody 1980-1992 Civil War. I would like to take this opportunity to reiterate on behalf of the government of El Salvador our request for forgiveness to the thousands of innocent victims, but especially the victims of the massacre El Mozote, Foreign Minister Hugo Martinez said during a ceremony at the town. He noted that Salvadoran president, the country's first democratically elected leftist president since the Civil War, had already apologized for other violent incidents attributed to the army, state security forces, and paramilitary groups. I wonder who was supporting and supplying them. Deadline Tokyo, the chief administrator of a panel of experts that will provide data to help shape Japan's energy policy following Fukushima, dismissed a newspaper report that the panel had come to a conclusion on cost assessments of atomic power. Satoshi Kasukabe, counselor to the cabinet, told members of the panel in the sixth meeting that he deeply apologized about the report, saying no data exists apart from the numbers that are already public. One newspaper citing it, what it said was the panel's draft report, said the panel had estimated the cost of nuclear power will rise by at least 50% and perhaps by as much as 70% within the next 20 years. Deadline San Francisco, highlighting the occasional tensions between the scientific community and journalists who write about science. Popular science writer Simon Winchester apologized to geoscientists for a March article in which he suggested that earthquakes on one side of the Pacific could trigger temblors on the other. Apparently, there is no evidence to support such a contention. A British restaurant has apologized for charging a $4.76 head tax for babies who don't eat the restaurant's food. Cosmo, which boasts it can feed 800 people a night, has admitted it would appear that the training for both the staff and the managers at Croydon fell well below that of our other restaurants. The admission came after two women complained at the extra charge for their babies. They'll also get a personal apology for their mistreatment by staff. One woman complained she was charged for her six-week-old baby because I was told he was taking up space with or without a stroller. The other said her infant was exclusively breastfed and would be sitting on an adult's lap, but was told it was their new policy. Famous Phoenix Sheriff Joe Arpaio apologized this week to victims for his office's botched investigations of a large number of sex crimes cases as the tough-talking lawman faced a growing outcry over mismanagement in his office. Arpaio held a news conference to discuss the investigations in the city of El Mirage a day after the AP ran an article outlining some of the bungled cases. His office said 432 sex crimes investigations from El Mirage were reopened after his office learned of cases, including dozens of alleged child molestations that hadn't been investigated adequately or weren't examined at all over a three-year period ending in 2007. If there were any victims, I apologize to those victims, the sheriff said. That's an if apology, sir. The stars of the Discovery Channel television show Mythbusters, Adam Savage and Jamie Hyneman, visited Dublin, California this week to apologize to people who live in a neighborhood where homes and a car were damaged when a cannonball experiment went awry. A crew was filming the show at the Alameda County Bomb Range. They were conducting an experiment using a cannon they'd built about 2 years ago and have used at least three times before. A 30-pound projectile was intended to pass through several barrels of water, which would slow the cannonball before passing through a cinder block wall and striking the blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it missed the water, broke through the wall, and careened off the hill into a neighborhood where it damaged two homes and a parked car. "We're deeply sorry. This is the worst thing that's ever happened," said Savage. "We want to make everything right and fix the house so that it's as good as or better than it was before." Okay. But ladies and gentlemen, watch out for TV crews who fix your house. You know what happened on those shows where they did that, and 2 months later, the cardboard came off. Dateline Ottawa. The Japanese government this week apologized to Canada for mistreating Canadian prisoners of war in World War II, 70 years after the fall of Hong Kong to Japanese forces in 1941. The apology was delivered in Tokyo by Japan's parliamentary vice minister for foreign affairs at a commemorative ceremony which was attended by Canada's Minister of Veterans Affairs, A. The press release said Minister of Veterans Affairs, Stephen Blaney, and Canadian Foreign Minister John Baird recognized the heartfelt apology from the government of Japan to former Canadian prisoners of war for their suffering during the Second World War. Blaney said the important gesture of Japan is a crucial step in ongoing reconciliation and a significant milestone in the lives of all prisoners of war. Dateline Lake Placid, New York. The superintendent of the Lake Placid Central School District has apologized to faculty and staff for using inappropriate language referring to female employees. Superintendent Randy Richards issued a district-wide apology letter 4 days after it was reported that in February he told middle school principal Catherine Mulderig he needed someone, quote, bitchier to govern the, quote, bitchy female teachers in the elementary school. In a copy of Friday's letter, Richard said he is responsible for ensuring our educators are afforded a workplace which encourages professionalism and mutual respect. He wrote that the inappropriate language was not meant to be directed specifically at Mulderig or any other individual. He said he regrets using such language. Scouts Canada has engaged an auditing company, KPMG, to investigate about 350 files of sex abuse cases dating back to the 1940s. Scout Canada's chief commissioner issued a public apology this week to former scouts who suffered sexual abuse at the hands of its leaders and promised that an investigation is underway. "Our sincere efforts to prevent such crimes have not always succeeded," said the chief commissioner of Scouts Canada. "We are sorry for that. We are saddened by any resulting harm." That was in a video apology. Scoutmasters. Who do they think they are? Basketball coaches? Football coaches? Archbishops? The school board in Gaston County. Where is that? I don't know. I can't tell you. The Netherlands has apologized after 6 decades for a notorious massacre of up to 430 men and boys during Indonesia's bitter struggle for independence. Tjeerd de Wijswan, the Dutch ambassador to Indonesia, made the announcement in front of hundreds of villagers in Rawagade, the scene of the killings on December 9, 1947, of hundreds of boys and young men by Dutch troops. It just keeps getting better. The military, which was clinging onto a retreating colonial empire, arrived in the community before dawn and opened fire, sending residents scattering from their homes in panic. The apology was given in a ceremony at the Rawagade cemetery, where many of the victims were buried in a mass grave. And former MF Global chief, that's a hedge fund that went belly up, John Corzine, former governor of New Jersey, former senator from New Jersey, former head of MF Global when it went belly up. He apologized to customers, employees, and investors this week who have suffered because of the brokerage firm's collapse, but said he does not know where missing customer money is. Yeah, it's not a hedge fund. It was a brokerage firm. "Their plight weighs on my mind every day, every hour," Corzine said in prepared remarks. "I simply do not know where the money is or why the accounts have not been reconciled to date." His contrite but defensive remarks are his first since the firm went into bankruptcy on October 31st, and he resigned a few days later. The proximate cause of the failure was his decision to bet heavily on European currencies. What, does he not read the papers? That's what he should be apologizing for, not reading the papers. Ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, and sort of rounding up this week's review of the year. There will, of course, be more year in rebuke coming up. You may actually hear it. But to just wrap up the another one of the major news stories of the year, of course, was the assassination by the United States. The killing by the United States of Osama bin Laden, who had been hiding out, it turned out, in Abbottabad, a garrison community, not a garrison keeler community.
Not that quiet.
A garrison community in Pakistan, not far from the country's military academy. Isn't that nutty? One of the first people that President Obama phoned after the killing was his predecessor, as you'll hear again now in
The Year in Rebuke.
Retired Eagle.
Mr. President, you didn't gulp down your souffle, did you?
You know, it's great that a Nikon of evil is dead, but the best thing about this call is that you rescued me from having to eat that thing.
Well,
I'm okay with French toast and all, but did you know that most of a souffle is just nothing but air?
Actually, I did know that. I wanted to give you a brief rundown of the operation as we understand it at this hour. Mm-hmm. Of course, most of what I'm going to tell you will be contradicted by our people within a couple of days. So,
I'm not going to share this conversation with anybody. That's okay. But, you know, I mean, charging folks $20 to eat air, that is so French. Mm-hmm. And these people at the restaurant, they're not even real French people. They're just West Houston people putting on airs, literally. Mm-hmm. So how'd it go?
Well, pretty standard SEAL op. Firefight, human shield, resistance, shoot to kill.
Uh-huh. Where'd they get him?
Third floor bedroom.
No, I mean, where on him?
Mm. We think he was shot in the eye.
Isn't that weird? Mm. That shake that was behind the first attack on the World Trade Towers? He was blind, wasn't he?
Mm.
And now this. Tells you something, 44.
Yes, it does.
You're going to go into the terrorism business, you can look forward to losing an eye or two.
You'd have been very proud of the SEALs, Mr. President.
Hey, I'm even proud of you. Tough call to make.
Yes. Yes, it was. They gave us only about a 50% chance of getting him.
Huh. And the other 50% was...
not getting him.
Right. Got it. Well, you sure chose the right 50.
Yes, sir. You know, we saw a real-time video feed from Langley, the reception problem when it was killing time.
You know, I heard back when we approved the appropriation for the helmet cams, electronic focusing on the weapons is going to screw up the reception on the cameras. But, you know, the Pentagon people just said, we'll spray some stealth juice on the helmets, they'll be fine.
Stealth juice?
Yeah, that's what they told me it was called. Heck, what am I, some jet pilot or something? Actually, I am.
Well, sir, you can imagine what it was like watching these very brave men enter the compound in the middle of the night.
Yeah, sure. What was it, middle of the night, their time or yours?
Theirs.
Yeah, and I can't imagine you're still awake for it.
Mm, to say the least.
Yeah. Well, look, it's just the two of us. Mm. I'm cleared.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and say the most.
Right. Well, of course, you know, their intel doesn't tell them where in the compound he'll be.
Damn intel. See, that's why Dick had to keep going down to Langley and kick some keister.
So, as they start taking fire, camera work gets very shaky.
Yeah, see, that's one reason we were funding the advanced Pentagon research on the special ops robots. In other words, they don't flinch. Camera stays steady.
They secured a bunch of hard drives, computers, seized a pantload of useful intel resources. Uh-huh. We've got an urgent recruiting call out for some Arab speakers so they can translate this stuff.
Did Bin Laden say anything? Was there any, okay, fellas, you got me moment there? You know, that would have been sweet.
Yeah, it would have been. Frankly, I don't think he had a chance to say much of anything. They saw him. He backed up. It happened quicker than a Derrick Rose dunk.
Quicker than a who? What?
I just don't think we ordered the Navy SEALs there to engage in conversation with a man, even if any of them could have spoken Arabic. Anyway,
I guess all that enhanced interrogation we did kind of paid off after all.
Well, you know, funny thing about that.
Guess you're kind of glad you didn't close Guantanamo, all the new evildoers you're going to be rounding up after this.
Well, you know, got to put them somewhere. Yes, sir.
Is that indefinite detention thing going to turn out to be a little more handy than you used to think?
We have had reason to dial back our criticism of that down past the zero point. That's true.
Well, sir, don't worry about it. If we didn't live and learn, there'd be no reason for putting pencils on erasers.
Well, you got that right.
Well, listen here. You get that tape off of those cameras developed or whatever, you sure would appreciate getting a copy down here. It'd be fun to hit the couch and watch that some night, get Laura's mind off souffles and all.
Oh, absolutely. In the pipeline already. We're converting it to HD.
Great. Well, 44, thank you for all the heads-upness.
Well, you'll be getting a full CIA brief in the morning.
I'm sure if there's anything crucial in there, Cheney will pass it on to me.
I'm sure he will. Good night, Mr. President.
Good night, Mr. President.
And finally on today's broadcast, a little news from outside the bubble. The Pakistani Taliban have announced they're in peace talks with Pakistan's government. News that holds out the prospect of a 4-year insurgency winding down but could further fray the U.S.-Pakistan relationship, according to The Guardian. Our talks are going in the right direction, says the commander of the Pakistani Taliban. All right, then. That's reason enough to celebrate, don't you think? Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of The Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.490 megahertz shortwave, on the Mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com or kcrw.com. Available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com. Available as a free podcast through KCRW.com. And it'd be just like Larry King having 6 minutes on the radio if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Uh-huh. A note to our New Orleans listeners. A week from tonight, two shows. Judith and Harry's Christmas musical event at the Contemporary Arts Center. A 4 p.m. show. All ages, and an 8 p.m. show where we tell the shocking truth about Santa. And amazing New Orleans musicians filling the stage with song. Hope to see you there. This broadcast is on Twitter at The Harry Shearer. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.